Steve King and Johnny Putman of News Talk 720 WGN. So this is International Guitar Month, and throughout the month we are observing International Guitar Month by talking with some of the people that that we feel are some of the finest guitar players on the planet, and we're fortunate to know some of them. But we thought, you can't do this. You just can't even begin to talk about guitars without going back to the source, and that's Les Paul.
Father of the electric guitar and multi-track recording. We've been fortunate enough to have these conversations with Les for almost 20 years now, and as we said at the outset, you could not think about International Guitar Month without saying hello to Les Paul. How are you, Lester?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Les, good to talk to you, buddy.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, I'm lucky. I found a battery, and now I got both hearing ears going, and I can hear both of you.
Wait a minute. You found a battery?
So let me get this straight. If you only had one battery, then you'd only be able to hear Johnny, right?
That's right.
Well, smart man, Les.
How you doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
We were just realizing that it is just a little short of a year ago when we were last with you up in Waukesha for your homecoming concert.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And what a nice time we had.
Yes.
Oh, that was fun.
May of last year at the museum up in Waukesha, Wisconsin. When
and
Les
then,
came home.
Then Les kept us up till the wee hours of the morning partying up in his hotel room.
That's right.
In the evening.
Yes. Now, for folks who don't know, Les still works every Monday night at the Club Iridium, and every Tuesday morning when Chris Lenz posts the pictures from that night's show up on his website at redhotred.com. We, about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, we go to see what you're up to, what you look like, and you're looking good. You look like you're just coming along just great.
Oh, we had a great, great crowd last night. They were lined up around the block. A lot of guests.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wonderful night.
Is it true that I was reading an article, and it said that the, because some of your albums are sold at the Club Iridium, the article said that the album that people most want to buy is the one that you did with Chet Atkins. Is that true?
Well, it's one of them. It's doing very well all of time.
Hmm.
But oddly enough, one of them that surprises me all the time is an album I made many years ago for Decca, and it's a Hawaiian album.
I've got that.
You
yes.
have it?
With that picture of you with that, where did you get that crazy Hawaiian shirt, Les?
Well, no, you're looking at the second one, the one with Mary in it?
Yeah.
No, this is one prior to that, about 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to remember I'm 93, otherwise I think it was yesterday.
Oh, that's good. So was it like a trend in music to play Hawaiian music, or were you just, as always, marching to your own drummer and said, you know what, I'm just going to go in the studio and make Hawaiian music?
No, this was a case where Jack Capp, who was the genius of Decca Records, had that handle, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters and Guy Lombardo and everybody else that you can think of. He just came to me one day and he said, would you do me a favor? Would you make a Hawaiian album? I says, I would be more than glad to do what would make you happy. Yes, I will do that if you'll do me a favor. And so he let me record with Bing, and I did the album, and both of them turned out great.
Wow. And now people are saying Les playing Hawaiian music, and they want to have that CD in their collection. I love it.
That's the way it's going.
Yeah.
By the way, we were listening to some audio of a presentation you did just, I think it was within the past week or so, for the ASCAP Awards for Steve Miller. When you did a really nice presentation for Steve.
That was very sweet.
Oh, I didn't hear that yet, yeah. but I was on it.
Yes, mm-hmm. you were. And well, we know, we have a friend, Dave Alpert, who works for ABC News. He was there that night, and I guess there was not a dry eye in the house when Steve Miller walked up to accept his award after the tape presentation that you made. And I guess he got a little teary, because you've known him since he was a little guy, like under the age of, what, five?
Oh, yes. He when I got married, we spent our wedding night in his room. And so he had to sleep out on the porch or something. And anyway, it was time for him to go potty. And he wasn't waiting for nothing. So he just tore the door open and
just marched on through.
I'm running through to get to the bathroom. And I says, "What's your name?" And he says, "It's Steve." And he says, "You got a nice guitar there." I says, "Do you like guitar?" He says, "Well, I play." And so he picked it up, and we sat on the edge of the bed, and I started to teach him to play the guitar.
Now, was his father a club owner or something up in Wisconsin?
No. He was a pathologist.
Well, this story gets stranger all the time. So here's a pathologist who invites this newlywed couple to his house because his father had something to do with music, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he used to love music. Uh-huh. And he loved gospel music. And so he would, every Sunday, he would go record them at the church, at the Baptist church.
Uh-huh.
He loved to get these gospel musical numbers, and when he moved to Texas, he was in heaven.
Huh.
And he would send them to me, and we put a lot of time in together.
You know, we've had a lot of people emailing us and asking people who have your Les Paul and Friends American Made World Plate album, and they've heard us talk to you about some of the other projects. You're still working on, I believe, is it a bluegrass album and a jazz album?
I got all kinds of things going. I got four books going. One just came out. Did you get the new book?
No,
what's that?
There's a new one called The Early Years of Les Paul, The Legacy of Les Paul. And it's been out about 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rob Lawrence and myself, we did it, and we're very proud of it. It's a very nice book.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to have to, I think I know what I'm spending my allowance on this weekend.
Well, we'll get you past the third foot.
And I need all the help I can get, Les.
I didn't know for years that there was anything above the third foot.
And what?
It was very cute, but when I went to bed at night or in the morning, I would tie a spool of thread to my toe, and I'd throw the spool out the window. And I had an ironclad rule that they weren't to yank on that spool of thread unless it was an emergency. And it was an emergency, and I slid down the drain pipe in my shorts, and I says, "What's the emergency?" He says, "There's a fellow 9 miles out of town, and he'll be playing tonight that can play past the third fret." And I says, "There's nothing up there. That's just for looks." And he says, "There's all kinds of things up there." And so they sneak me in through the men's room, and I met him, and he started to give me guitar lessons every time he came through town. And the next thing you know, I was partners with him, and then, of course, I went my way, he went his way, and I took Mary, and I think, I don't know what he got something.
That was Sonny Joe Wolverton, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. A very dear friend. He's passed on, but to me, he's the fellow that taught me to play.
Did you ever do any recording with Sonny Joe Wolverton, Les?
No. No, well, we did, but it's nothing that we kept. Probably there are people who will show up along the way. Like last night, all of a sudden, somebody came in from Wisconsin, and and said, I have your family tree.
Really?
Yep. Yep. And they got six generations of it. And so I got a tree now.
Oh, my gosh. So this would be the Polfus family tree?
Mm-hmm.
And you had never had that done before?
Well, I had it done, but I didn't know where I put it. And I'll be darned if they didn't walk it. And there's all kinds of people from Wisconsin walking. My piano player, who was Undertaker, he didn't walk in. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But his family came in, and we were talking about on the stage, and I was talking about how wonderful it was to have an Undertaker that was playing at night with me. I couldn't figure out which was his hobby.
Okay.
I asked him, and they said that they would ask the ditch digger that he probably would know.
Oh, dear.
The fellow that dug the graves, you know.
Yes, yes.
This is a very sad subject, you know.
Oh, I can tell, yeah.
The band that you play with now at the Club Uridium, I'm guessing, after seeing you all play together last May up in Waukesha, I'm guessing that there's a chemistry like you really never had on stage with another band. Is that true?
Yes, it is very true. They are very loyal and great, great musicians.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I want to tell you something that introducing me on the air tonight, when you played Mary and I, it makes me think that every morning we wake up the astronauts.
Oh.
Is how high the moon will wait for the sunrise. I'm sitting on top of the world.
Yeah.
And we wake them up in the morning for breakfast.
Isn't that something?
That's neat.
It's real cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of cool things that have happened in Les Paul's life over the years. And as Steve said, when we played that little bit from Caravan, we clearly recall when you were 89 years old when we said, what are your hopes and dreams when you turn 90? And you said to get a Grammy. And, buddy, if you didn't get two, you said, well, yeah. And we were just so proud of you because I remember sitting here when you said, I'm going to get a Grammy when I'm 90 years old. And you did.
Well, I got about 20 of them now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Grammys, I don't think they give me as much satisfaction as it does to be here on Earth and to have a lot of friends and to be blessed with whatever I have. I'm very happy about it.
Well, Johnny was talking about how every Monday night into Tuesday morning we go to Chris Lenz's website, redhotred.com, and we look at the pictures of you. And I can just tell every week when you're playing at the Club Uridium, that's the healthiest thing you can do, just doing something that you enjoy doing every week.
That's medicine for you, isn't it?
It's therapy. Mm-hmm. It's therapy, and it's a wonderful thing. It gives me faith. It gives me a lot of good things, and what makes me happy is that it makes the people happy.
Mm-hmm.
They leave happy.
Hmm.
And we keep hearing from people who've gone to the Club Uridium to see you, and they're always telling us stories of how after the second show, you just sign autographs till the last person is gone, and you stick around, and there's nobody who gets left out.
Well, I love to talk to them, and I always ask them where they're from. And so many of them come from so many interesting places, you know, that the conversation goes that way. And in that way, you get to know things that you wouldn't know otherwise if you just signed an autograph, or some people don't even do that. And so it's nice to be privileged to be able to talk to all these different people.
Les, we have to take a break. You can stay with us for a while?
I can stay with you forever.
Oh,
well, all right.
Thank you.
Lucky us. We're talking with Les Paul, International Guitar Month, and the man who is much more than just a name on a guitar.
Amen.
He is the source, Les Paul. That was back in the days of the Les Paul Trio. Les, I don't know if I've ever asked you this. I always had the impression, and I think most people did, from listening to Bing Crosby's records, that he was a very easygoing, laid-back guy. Was he like that in the recording studio in person?
Oh, he was real laid-back. In fact, when he called me the night before, and he says, "Hey, would you like to do a number with me tomorrow?" And I said, "Sure, what time?" 8 o'clock. So I thought he meant at night, but he meant that morning. And so I went over to the Paramount lot, and he was doing Going My Way, and I was watching him perform, and he was talking, he and I were talking, and finally he handed me the music, and he says, "Well, play this thing for me." And I said, "Geez, I'd love to, but I can't read." Well, he says, "We got a problem. I can't read either." And so a gaffer that was fixed late, he come down off the ladder and he says, "I play a little piano for you." He played the song something like that, okay? And we went over and we kind of made up that melody. And so the writers had to change it a bit when the record came out.
Oh, my gosh.
I never heard that story, Les.
And here is a killer. He said, "Get in the car." And I got in the car, and we went for a ride up and down Sunset Boulevard. And he kept pointing at different buildings. He said, "You like that building?" I said, "Beautiful building." And then he showed me another place and another one. Finally, I says, "Bing, I don't get it. Why are you looking at all the buildings?" He says, "Because there's something I want you to do. I want to build for you the Les Paul House of Sound." Okay?
Mm.
And he says, "I want you to have where you teach the young ones how to play the guitar, how to play their instruments, all the way up with the evolution of recording all the way to now."
Mm.
And I said, "But Bing, I just feel like playing my guitar." And so I went back to the house, and the two friends of mine that were waiting there, Vern and Lloyd, said to me, "How'd it go with Bing?" I said, "It went fine with Bing, but I says he was on a kick where he wanted me to go into business like Fred Astaire or the dancing school."
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so they said, "Well, why don't you do it?" And I said, "Nah, I want to play." And the two guys says, "We'll help you build this garage right here into a little recording studio," which we did. And again, Bing came back to me, and he's standing in the backyard, and he says, "Les, this is the best sound I've ever heard." And he says, "I just insist that you do it." I never did do anything about it until about 3 months ago. And 3 months ago, I got a call. And I can't tell you yet, but there's going to be an enormous building going up with the Les Paul House of Sound.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Isn't that a shocker?
That's wonderful, Les.
Yes, it is wonderful. And in my lifetime, I never thought I would do it. I just want to credit Bing with the idea of it and how great it is.
Well, if you met Bing in the early to mid-40s, and this idea has been 60 years in the making.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
And it only happened a few weeks ago. A few months ago,
uh-huh.
When some people came to me that got jillions and jillions. They got heavy pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Just came in and said, hey, we got to do something about you, but we got to take all the things that you have from ancient times, from the beginning,
uh-huh.
right up till tomorrow. And so that the kids can go in there and they can play the instruments, record, and do the same thing you're doing, play along with you if you wish, okay? And we'll have the technique of everything that's happened from the time recording started with Edison to now.
That's wonderful.
Oh, that's terrific, yeah. Les.
That's exciting.
Yes, so you're the first ones for me to tell.
Wow.
Tomorrow we're having a conference call on how we're going to bring the trucks here and get all the stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
There.
So okay. This is going to be a...
It's only going to be a short distance from you.
Really?
That is really true.
Wow,
that's wonderful.
I'm even more excited now.
So this is going to be, and I understand if there's some things you can't say yet, but is this going to be some of the things that are currently in your recording studio at home?
All of it.
Wow.
Right from the beginning, from the time I invented it with my first guitars, with the first recording lathes, and right on to the invention of the multi-track tape machine, and go into to recording studios where the people can go in there and hands-on make their own recordings with the newest equipment that's on the market today.
And it really does all go back to Bing, because Bing gave you that first Ampex recorder.
That's exactly right.
In the 40s, and your life was forever changed that day, along with the success of a song like It's Been a Long, Long Time. And then you slipped into the 50s, and your life was, I mean, you were a household name.
Well, now you wonder why I picked Bing as one of my favorite people.
I get it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you, for aspiring young guitarists, what kind of equipment are you using today, Les? If you decide you want to go in and you want to record something, what are you using today?
We're doing all digital stuff, and we're storing everything. For instance, the Library of Congress is coming here, and they're taking everything that I have recorded, everything that I have done, and it's all going to be in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So all the stuff will be stored and restored and kept so that it doesn't deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, we found a home for all the equipment from the very beginning. Up in Waukesha, Wisconsin, where it started.
Right.
All the way up till tomorrow.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The new guitars that are coming out, I'm sure you haven't seen them yet, or I don't think you have. But we have some new guitars out there now that are going to surprise the daylights out of you.
Well, I know that Gibson just made an announcement about some of the guitar. Well, there's the Les Paul, what is it called, the Les Paul robot guitar that kind of tunes itself?
Yes, that's one.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And then we have a digital guitar, which is two, and then we have a third one, okay, where the pickup buried. It has five pickups on it. It's a fantastic guitar. And that's coming out, too. So we've got a future of guitars that are just way ahead of their time.
With all of the things that you've invented, if you had to pick just one, what's the coolest thing you ever invented?
Mary.
Okay.
It's so funny, Les. One of our listeners named Lisa said that she wanted to know how you first met Mary Ford, and was she Mary Ford when you met her?
She wasn't Mary Ford, no. She was Colleen Summers.
Mm-hmm.
And
she was a knockout.
And what a talent. What a talent.
I've seen a film of her singing with
Jimmy Wakely. There's a video up on YouTube of then Colleen Summers doing harmony with Jimmy Wakely from some old black and white movie.
And she was just drop dead gorgeous, and that voice would, I could see how it would just melt you.
Bless you, had good taste.
Boy, I've got a lot to be grateful for.
Amen.
Well, what about the guitarists now? There's others that you would like to be talking to.
Oh, well, we have.
In fact, later this month, we're going to be talking to Tommy Emmanuel. We had Doyle Dykes on last night. We had Johnny A on last week. And we've got some other guitar players we're going to be talking with later in the month. But we had to talk to you. In fact, if you don't mind, can we go to a couple of our listeners? They have some questions for you.
I'd love it.
Great.
Okay, let's bring in Mike, who is on the north side. Mike, you're on WGN with Les Paul. Hey, Mike.
Hi. Oh my God, I'm so honored. I'm Mr. Paul. I'm actually in high school.
I'm more scared than you are.
I actually grew up listening to your music. My uncle is a guitarist, and he actually owns a 1959. I can't remember. I've seen it so many times. It's this gorgeous honey-colored guitar. Mm-hmm. It's one of yours, and it's he treats it better than he treats his kids.
It's better than a psychiatrist. It's better than a mistress. It's better than a cook.
Better than a psychiatrist, a mistress, and a cook. That's some sales point. I love that.
Yeah. The guitar is your friend. It's something great. Steve, you can verify that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he last year I bothered him enough, and for my 17th birthday, he said he bought me a guitar, and not a Les Paul guitar, but a guitar. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing for a year now, and Lester and Chester is, oh my God, it's like what I would aspire someday, just to have that sort of just amazing rhythm. I have it on vinyl, and I listen to it, and it's so
Mike,
good.
Where do you live?
I live in Chicago.
On the north side of Chicago, where your old stomping grounds, Les.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, Sheridan Road.
Yeah.
Sheridan Road and Outer Drive.
I learned how to play at the Old Town School.
Oh.
My uncle has been playing there for years, and whenever he brings his guitar in, like, the whole room goes quiet. Well, and everyone, like, walks over to it and wants to touch it.
Now, what you have to do is you have to get your uncle, and together you guys have to make a pilgrimage to New York. As Les said, people are doing that all the time. But it's funny because being from the north side of Chicago, Les, I always enjoy you talking about really your hangouts were there on the north side, on Broadway, on Sheridan, just up and down from the Loop all the way north, right?
Yep.
And we're talking about clubs back in the day when there were clubs all over the place where you could work a club and the next night you could have a gig at a different club. Is that true?
They weren't gigs. They were just places that we'd go and cut each other up. The fun was in finding somebody that played a lot of guitar and then take him on and fight him right till there was blood all over the floor and then go to the next club that night and do the same thing. You know, it was great sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is
we all learn new ideas. I learn every Monday. I learn new things.
Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is back in that day, you weren't walking out with a pocket full of money when you would go in and do these shows. I mean,
yes, money was unimportant. It was just to have that guitar under your arm, and you could go in there, and it was a deadly weapon. It was something that you could take, and you could mow them down with that guitar.
You sound like a Chicago gangster.
I had everybody but Bugs Moran.
Oh, gosh. Well,
Les, we have to take another quick break. Can you hang with us for a few more minutes?
We got him warmed up now. Hang on, buddy, because we got some people who want to talk to you. Mike, thank you for calling. We'll take a break and come right back with the living legend, Les Paul.
Steve King and Johnny Putman of News Talk 720 WGN, International Guitar Month, and we are celebrating with Les Paul. That is one of the probably lesser known Les Paul songs. That was back from the days when you were with Columbia Records, right, Les?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to make something different, so I wanted it to be sort of a polka number, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I had that in mind when I made it.
And that was called Big Eyed Gal, which is still available. There are. Do you have any idea how many record companies have released Les Paul records, Les?
My goodness, you know, Monday, there must have been maybe a dozen albums that I've never seen in my life.
That people brought in to have you autograph, and you looked at them and said, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, if you could get your accordion.
Oh, Lester.
Big Eyed Gal.
Now we're getting ugly. Lorraine emails us from Lombard, Les, and she said back in the early 50s, she was selling records at the Woolworth store downtown. Bet you remember that place. And she said she used to play the Les and Mary songs until she was almost fired at the store. She wants to know if it's true that the echo effect was from Mary singing in a tiled bathroom.
Yes, I used to do that. I got to tell you a real funny short story.
Sure.
But we were in New Mexico somewhere, and we woke up in the morning, and I said, Mary, I'll get you some coffee and a donut. And when I left to go to the office where they served the breakfast, the continental breakfast, they were shooting a movie there. And when we went to bed, we didn't know it, but when we woke up, it was Gary Cooper, and they were shooting the Indians surrounding a train, and their arrows are sticking in the doors. It was crazy. It was just crazy. But anyway, Mary was in the shower, and she was singing in the shower, and I says, there's the sound I've been looking for. That's the sound that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to remember it as much as I could so that when I got to Chicago, we were from leaving California to go to Chicago, and I said, I'm going to make a room exactly like that so I get that sound with Mary's voice. It would be just perfect. Okay, so I was going to build a shower and a bathroom and build that whole, the whole motel room so that it would be just that sound. Okay? And years went by and I forgot all about it. And all long, many, many, many years went by, and I'm with another girl, and we're driving through the same town, and I remember the log cabin inn near Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so I pull in there. I says, "Would you like to stay here tonight? This is a nice room." And so I went into the clerk and I asked the clerk if we could if they had a room, and he says, yes, we do. What's your name? And I says, well, it's Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And I says, I'm only renting the room for 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And so he looked at me so funny, and he says, and I want you to come with us.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Now that. And so I says, and oh, by the way, can you bring me a tape measure? And some paper and a pencil. And he says, boy, I've got one here like I've never seen before in my life. And so she's waiting in the car. She's not even getting out of the car.
Uh-huh.
And I go in there and I ask, that I expressly for room 62.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got the same room, and here he is with the flashlight. He's got the
tape measure.
And the paper and the pencil. And we're ready to measure, and whatever it is, it's only going to take 10 minutes, and then we're gone. I went in there and they changed the whole room.
Oh.
They redecorated the thing and my echo chamber was gone.
But your reputation lived on.
And I know that that guy must still be alive, says, oh. What in the world was he doing with that tape measure and all that?
Oh, my gosh, it's a great story.
And I never told him about that. This is the best echo I ever heard in my life.
Oh, my gosh. So then you were on the hunt for that great echo in a tiled bathroom from then on.
Yeah, my gal couldn't figure me out either.
I guess. Oh, that's a great story, Les.
Oh, that's funny.
So great many story, that's for sure. That's for sure.
There's so many people who want to talk to you. We are so fortunate to have some time to spend with Les. For those of you who, it's appropriate to go to bed before we've had the good fortune of talking to Les at 3 and 4 o'clock, 3 in the morning. We're always so conscious of the fact that it's an hour later on the East Coast, and so this time or so around, we said, Les, could you join us earlier so you could talk to us earlier to some of your fans? And so we're going to hush up for a few minutes and let Nick and Lockport. You're on WGN with Les Paul. Hi, Nick. Les Paul. Nick.
Good evening.
Nick.
And I'll be brief and short so you can get another caller in. My question to Les would be this. Over the years, Les, all the musicians, that you've worked with, and many of them that a lot of people have never heard, was there ever of that one musician, that you thought that was destined for greatness, that years down the road came very successful?
Absolutely. In fact, this month they're having a special tribute to him, and that's Art Tatum. He started Three Deuces in Chicago. I played with him for years. He's a very dear friend of mine. He's passed away. And they're donating his piano to the Apollo Theater. And I'll be up there to give a little yak in his behalf. And how much I loved him how much time we spent together and how so flawlessly. He played the piano. He was just one of the great, greatest musicians of all time.
Oh,
wow.
We were so fortunate to have him here in Chicago. And in Chicago, I believe in the documentary, Chasing a Sound.
Yes, he's in there,
and you talk about Art Tatum and of Art. Honestly, that was the first time I'd actually personally seen the man, and he just seemed like such a big, lovable guy.
And he was blind. He was blind, and he would go to his home and rehearse, and I would sit there and listen to it. And we discussed what he's going to record next, Never did I ever hear a record of his that justified just how great a player he was. You had to hear him in a speakeasy joint. At 4 o'clock in the morning, and the greatest of all, I ever heard was believe me now, this, believe me, this is weird, but weird true. It was in a mortuary in a area over in New Jersey. And you had to go through the mortuary to get into the back room where there was a piano, and there were all the great piano players waiting to take on. Okay. And when I brought him, said to Art, come on, Don, follow me. And he's got his arm, and we're walking through, and he says, walking through, and that I smell. I said, someone on the drain, someone board there, and you did board there. Just follow me here. Just follow me.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I got back, and here's the line, and Herb Chitterson, and who was that? Don was that? Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the great piano players, and they're playing as hard as they can. And Art is sitting there, five keys going down. I says, yeah, down. I said, they stick down. You got a problem. He says, can you bring me another beer? So I go to beer, to the wash tub, and I get him another beer, another out of the ice, another there. I open it for him, and he'd have that beer, and finally that beer, and he says, I'm ready. He says, take me up there. And I took him up, and I'm up on the stage. And he played about 50 choruses, okay, mm-hmm. of a song, whatever the song was, a Chic, something like that. But he played way beyond what you would normally hear on a 2.5, 3-minute record.
Hmm.
In other words, what Art played there was almost like you painted a picture and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you're going to play 50 choruses. I'm telling you, you're going to dig deep.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you're going to play things that are in your soul that you didn't even know you had. And those were the days that I remember Art Tatum when he was beyond he ever made unrecorded anywhere.
And there are just some performers who are like that, Les, aren't there? That you get them in the studio and it's almost like they freeze up, but in a live club or joint situation, they're just incredible.
Yeah, the light lights and that's it. That's one of the nice things about when we did the thing with Chet and I,
mm-hmm.
I asked Chet if he would go eat breakfast with me again. We just came from breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Went back the second time for breakfast, and that's where I suggested to him, why don't we speak to the people on the records so they can hear our personality, they can hear what we're like, off of a record without a guitar. And Chet says, well, he says, I don't have much to say, and I'm not so, you know, and he had all kinds of things. But Chet was great. Chet had a dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
He was very, very, very quick, and it was just great for us to just set up a microphone between the two of us so that we could carry on the conversation. And the first one was that one where I says, you ever hear of Mel B?
Right, right.
That was the first one out, and the audience was just the guys in the band,
uh-huh.
the two members of my group with Fred Waring, Ernie and Jim.
Huh.
And Jim was Chet's half-brother. and Ernie Newton was my bass player.
Mm-hmm.
But when they pull that first joke,
mm-hmm.
first, and you ever hear him, Mel Bay? And he says, yeah, dear, he teaches the guitar or something. Mm-hmm. I says, don't you think we should send for it?
That's great.
Well, yeah, that was the first line.
Speaking of knowing or seeing raw talent in someone, isn't it true that you saw Jimi Hendrix performing in a bar and you knew that there was really something going on there?
Oh, yes. I was on Route 46 and I was taking a record back to Simon and Garfunkel. Sounds of Silence. And I have the parts. They're parts. And they're going to release the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I have the master tape. And we're going by this little beer joint on Route 46 in New Jersey. And I said, stop here a second. And I got out of the car. And I went in there. And there was some guy watering down the drinks in this joint in the afternoon, and there was a fellow on the stage, and he was with a work light up there, and he was auditioning for a job, and this left-handed guitar player was all over that thing, and he had it turned wide open, and he was playing. And I walked out to the car, and I said to my son, I says, hey, I says, there's a guy in there, a wild man. I says, he's good. And I says, I would like to get this guy a break on a record company. I says, this guy is good. So what we did is we delivered the record to Columbia in New York, Sound of Silence, got back in the car, went back to the beer joint over in Jersey, and I says, what happened to the fellow that was here, the wild man? He says, we threw him out. He was too loud.
Oh.
And I says, what was his name? He says, I don't know. We never asked his name.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was under the name of Jimmy James or another name. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I told my manager I'd run into this guy that was very, very good, I thought, but I only heard him up there all alone by himself and in this dark room, and would you look for him? But I don't know his name, but he plays left-handed, and I says, he's a wild man. And so he finally came to me, my manager did, and he said, Les, that fellow died in a fire smoking a cigarette.
Mm.
And so I gave up looking. Of course, he's gone. So I gave up looking for this wild man. And one day, a guy named Mac McGuire, at London Records, asked me if I would come out of retirement. This was about 1970. And he said to me, you can make anything you want, but I would just love to have you make one more record before you throw the towel in.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he got me on a weekday, and I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I go to make the record, and I says, hey, find me some of the music they're playing today, because what I played with Mary, that was in the 50s. That's over. This is 70 now, and things are different.
Mm-hmm.
And look around. See what you can find. Maybe it was 60-something, and not 70, but it was back there. So it was back somewhere. When that record came out on London Records. And so I says, find me some of the guitar players that are good, and I'll play them, and I'll know what the music is like that they're playing right now.
Hmm.
And so he dug some out, and some of them, I knew the players and so forth, so I like Eric Clapton, people mm-hmm. like that. I recognized them, and I put them down as great for to make this next album. I'm going to make. And there I look, and on one of the album covers is a picture of Jimi Hendrix, and it says he's a big hit in England.
Hmm.
And I call my manager, and I says, hey, you know that guy that died in a fire smoking a cigarette? He's number one in England.
Wow.
And that's how I met him. And, of course, he bought Electric Lady in New York, and we became friends.
Yeah, that's just a wonderful story. We're talking with Les Paul, the wonderful Les Paul. Now, Les, we've got a couple of other folks who've been waiting to chat with you. Is there any chance we can ask you to rest your ear for a few minutes and come back and talk with them?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. You're the greatest.
Okay, more with Les Paul coming up. Stay with us.
Nothing like asking him live on the radio,
yeah.
You know.
Well, he can't resist a coupon.
I know.
Yeah. That is the amazing Les Paul, Steve King and Johnny Putman of News Talk 720 WGN. Les, I don't know if I ever told you this. That is one of my absolute favorite songs that you ever did. Jasmine Blues. I love the thing.
Well, thank you. And you know that was number one for us when we played the Chicago Theater?
Oh.
Really?
It was number one.
Well, how cool is that? I've seen those great pictures of you and Mary Terry outside the Chicago Theater with people holding signs, Les and Mary, for president.
Yeah. Those are wonderful days.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, coming from that area, from Chicago, that's where I got all my training and all the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of coming from Chicago, I want to go to one of our callers, and I see who this is, and I think she's gonna mention a name that you may remember out of your past. Let's go to Camille in Chicago. Hey, Camille, you're on WGN with Les Paul.
Hi, Steve and Johnny, and thank you for taking my call. It's
sure.
An honor to talk to you, Mr. Les Paul. My great uncle was Carl Davis, Carl and Hardy.
Who?
Carl Davis.
Carl Davis of Carl and Hardy, who used to be
my goodness, of course, mm-hmm. of course. The Cumberland Ridge owners.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And my Uncle Bill, who's still alive, was telling me that in the old days that you used to have another name called Rhubarb Red.
That is correct.
Now, Carl Davis of Carl and Hardy worked at WLS at that time?
At WJJD.
Oh, JJD, mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, actually, Steve, you knew Carl Davis.
Well, later, Les, I don't know if you know this, but in later years, when WLS went to a rock and roll format, and when they still had members of the Chicago Musicians Union, Local 10, who were record turners, Carl Davis was one of those musicians who was a record turner, and I had the very good fortune of getting to meet and know and become good friends with Carl Davis.
Well, he was your record turner for
years. He was an extraordinarily nice gentleman.
Mm-hmm. He played mandolin.
Mandolin,
yep. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and then Slim Miller played the violin. I found all those guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you had been Rhubarb Red since you were, what, 13 years old?
I started out as Red Hot Red in Chicago, in Waukesha, mm-hmm. and then changed my name in St. Louis to Rhubarb Red.
Did you change it, or did someone say, Les, there's somebody else out there that's got a name close to yours? How, you were just a kid.
Exactly right. You sound like this fellow, and I says, that's my mentor. His name is Pipeline Pete.
Oh.
And they says, then we'll call you Rhubarb Red. Rhubarb and Pipeline's the same thing.
Now, Pipeline Pete, he was working on the barn dance, right?
Yes.
So you were able to hear the barn dance up in Waukesha as a kid?
On my crystal set, yeah.
Oh, my
God. I used to listen to them all the time.
Wow. Well, Camille, that's a great name from the past.
Well, yeah. those were all my teachers. Mm-hmm. That's where I learned how to do everything, was down there at WLS in Chicago, working at the barn dance and playing all around Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my stomping ground.
Well, unless I don't think I ever asked you this, though. Your mother, I know, was very supportive of your choice of showbiz as a career. But what about the fact that you were a kid and you should have been in school? I mean, did she say, Lester, you can only do this during the summer? Or did she just know that this was your destiny, that you were going to be in show business?
Mom and I were making the bed. Now, mother is very German. She was born in Wisconsin, and my grandparents and the others, they spoke German, but not mother. But my mother was very ultra neat, and so the corners of the bed had to be made just so, and I had to dust the furniture, and I had my chores to do and everything, and the phone rang, and it was Joe Wolverton down at Camworks in St. Louis, and he said, would you come down and join me down here in St. Louis, and we'll make up a team? And I said to my mother, I know, I realize that I'm so young and I have more time to spend in school, but it really wouldn't mean so much for me to be in school as it would be to be with someone like Joe and in where I'm going anyway one day, and that is to be an entertainer and whatever. And so she said, Lester, it is up to you.
Wow.
And so she did not stand in my way. She encouraged me, but she wasn't one of those that was out to be my manager or promote me or on an ego trip or anything.
She was never a stage mother then.
No stage mother. And she says, Lester, it's up to you. You know, it's, there's going to be rough days with grown people, and you're just a child, just a kid. And I went to St. Louis, and of course, like any kid, I would stand on Sundays when everything is closed and sit there at a newsstand that was closed and cry and miss my mother and miss my people, my friends, and back in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and I sweat it out. I was with much older men than myself, and I had to learn very fast. I had to learn very quickly how it is to be a grown man. Okay, because these were all older fellows than me, and I was just a young kid. And so it was a little hard for me to adjust to something that enormous as to be not only away from home. And so I had my mother run my machinery at home and record the shows. And one of the cutest things is the first week I was in St. Louis, I called my mother and told her what number I was going to sing for her. And she's going to record it. And, of course, as luck would have it, the show was canceled. And there was no barn dance coming from St. Louis. It was called Saturday Night Live or whatever it was back there in those days. I can't think of the name. It skipped my mind. But Monday or Tuesday, the program director came to me and he says, you know, you drew more mail than any other artist that we've ever had. It all came from Waukesha.
You weren't even...
Everybody told them down there how great I was. And the show was canceled.
Busted, right?
My mother was working for me.
Oh, that's a great story. Well, Camille, thanks for taking us down that lane.
Can I just ask one more question?
Yes, ma'am.
Sure, go ahead, Camille.
Mr. Paul, do you remember Shelby Jean Davis?
Yes, of course I do.
It's my mom.
Is that your mom? Well,
yes.
Tell her I love her, and my goodness, she was just a little tot singing.
Yeah, she was the little mountain sweetheart. I'll tell her.
That was a suppertime frolics.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
My goodness, what a memory you have, Celeste, because you had no idea that Camille was going to throw that name at you.
Camille, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you so much.
Uncle was absolutely a terrific gentleman. I was proud to know him.
And Doc Hopkins, too.
Yeah, Doc Hopkins and Hardy Taylor.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. We've opened a door.
I'll tell them all hello.
Thanks, Camille.
Thanks a lot, Camille.
Great.
Les, I have to tell you, Johnny has become extraordinarily good at doing searches on the Internet.
Yes.
She found something. Now, I pride myself on having most of the records that you've ever made or that you've ever been a part of. Johnny found something that I didn't know existed. This is it's an Art Tatum album. It's Art Tatum Live from 1934 to 1944, and it says guest artist Les Paul.
Oh, yeah.
They just re-released it a couple of years ago on CD.
Did they?
Yes, they did, and it's not an inexpensive CD. I think they're charging about $50 for it.
Well, I think for International Guitar Month, I think I need to get this.
I do, too.
My goodness. Those are wonderful memories. I'm so lucky that I was able to meet those great players, those great people, those great musicians.
We're also fortunate that people had the wherewithal to save recordings, as you have over the years. I mean, you have just an incredible history, your own history, that you have saved, and it's in good condition. And so now we go to YouTube, for example, and we see video of you performing back in the 50s, and then we can see you in the 70s, and even present day, pretty decent videos for people who come in. They're not professionals, but you can tell they love you and they love seeing you perform. And next thing you know, it pops up on the Internet.
And you know what? I got more gals now than I had when I was a kid. But I feel like a condemned building with a new flagpole on it.
No.
There are a couple of moments tonight that will go down in history, in my opinion. I'm still back on how a guitar is. We were talking during the news about quoting you on a guitar is better than a
psychiatrist,
yeah. a mistress, a chef,
a bartender.
Wow.
Housewife.
Oh, my. You better stop there, Les, because I have a feeling this is going to come back to haunt me. All right, we're going to sneak in a couple more for the wonderful Les Paul. And
we go to Gary, who's on the road. Gary, you're on WGN with Les Paul.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You guys have a great show.
Thank you.
This is what puts you guys over the top of everybody else.
Well, thank you.
And Mr. Les Paul.
Yes, sir.
It is an honor.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
No, I want to thank you for what you've done over the years.
I haven't done anything. I only wished I could.
You have done more than people know. That's the thing. And, you know, besides what you've done for the music, you are just a genuinely great person.
Thank you so much.
Gary, you'll get no argument from us, because every time we have the good fortune of spending time with Les, we say, he is an inspiration. Absolutely, hands down, inspires me.
In fact, Les, if you don't mind, I have to ask you, because we've had some emails. Some people want to know, how's your health? How you doing?
My health is great, thank you. My health is great, and 93, I feel like I'm going to be able to play for another 20, 30 years.
Mm.
Works for me.
As they say, from your lips to God's ears. Hey, Gary, thanks a lot. We're going to squeeze in a couple more. Got a couple of email to sneak in here for Les as well. And Todd in downtown, you're on WGN with Les Paul. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you, Les?
Hi, Todd. I'm fine.
It's a pleasure and an honor. I have a couple questions for you. I'm an avid guitar player. I have an ES-335
that's a good guitar.
I got it from my brother, and it's funny because I have a clipping from the Tribune in here when you were at the Guitar Center downtown, and you were at the House of Blues with Slash, Neil Skion.
Yeah.
That's where I met Steve and Johnny.
That's right. Right. That's where he came over and did our show for three
that's
hours.
That's when Les ducked out on the Gibson people after the show and came out and hung out in the studio with us for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering about what year that was.
That was 1996. I remember it very well.
And the ES-335 is still in great shape, and it's funny because my brother had you sign it with a pen. It's a hollow body.
Yeah,
you've got you scribbled on the inside, which is just a kick.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's very nice.
It's just such a pleasure talking to you.
I don't know if you know the story about what happened that night when Les came over here to the studio, and a couple of kids that were college students had come down from Wisconsin to see him. They weren't able to get into the House of Blues, but they knew that he was going to be over here. And they waited out in the lobby, and it was snowing that night. It started snowing really hard after midnight. And these kids stayed out in the lobby, and security came in and told our engineer that these guys weren't going to go because they were just determined they had to stay.
I wouldn't have left either.
Well, Les was such a gentleman. After doing the show at the House of Blues, after being with us on the radio for hours, he said, bring them on in. And so one kid had a Les Paul guitar, and he had Les sign it, and the other kid had a guitar in the case, and Les said, well, don't you want your signed? And the kid said, well, it's not a Les Paul. And he said, let me see it. And the kid took it out, and it was a Fender. And Les signed it, and he said, now it is. The kid was levitating as he walked out of the building. It was the greatest moment.
Well, it's just such a pleasure to talk to you two and him. It was funny because I was listening to another interview you did, Les, and you were talking about being at your doctor's office, and you're like, why am I here? And he's like, Les, keep working. Just keep working.
Yep.
So it's just you're an icon, and all us guitar freaks look up to you, and you just have done so much for the industry. It's just unfathomable, and I just want to give you a kudos.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool that he's a nice guy, too, on top of it.
Yeah, I hear that. The rumor has it he's a nice guy. Don't spread that around.
But don't tell the girls, because he's obviously got enough girls lined up at this point in time. Or can you ever have enough girls, Les? I have to ask you.
But I like older women.
Oh, yes. What, 30?
No, this is a joke, hon.
Yeah, oh, I know. Wink, wink. I have a quick email for you. A guy named Mike from Chicago wants to know if you play guitar every day in preparation for going to the club and working on Mondays.
No, I wish I could, but I'm writing a movie.
What?
I'm doing a movie, and I'm not in the movie, but it's the story of my life, and it's interesting because I've been writing and writing and writing and preparing for it, and I think I've written at least what a book would be, and I'm only in my 9th year.
Oh, wow. My gosh.
You can believe that, and I'm just writing down everything that I can remember from when my mother used to wash me in a sink.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Les, who would you, if you were casting the movie, who would you pick to play you, and who would you pick to play Mary?
I don't know. I would leave that up to them. Mm-hmm. They would be better to judge.
Did you ever see the movie Sweet and Lowdown?
Yes, I did, and I loved it.
I love the heart of the movie, but I got to tell you, watching the movie with a guitar player made me a little crazy because Sean Penn, for whatever reason, chose not to even learn how to hold a guitar, much less how to play it.
And I tell you, Les, that was so distracting because, like you, I love the movie, but it was so distracting that Sean Penn wasn't even attempting to play the guitar correctly.
Well, I don't understand why they made such a good movie and goof it up, but they did.
Because
but still the message was there.
That's right. And it was really it was the story of Django Reinhardt, even though it was loosely based on his life.
In fact, Les, that's one of the things that I've wondered about forever, why no one has actually done a movie on Django. There's a fascinating story there, too.
Oh, my goodness. I was with Django, and we swapped guitars. I gave him one of mine, he gave me one of his. And I came back here, flopped down on the bed, and the phone rang, and they said Django passed away. And so I took a flight the next day, and I have the tickets here and pictures here and all that stuff. And when I went back there, I found out that he didn't have, he lived on the sixth floor. He had no electricity. He had no heat. He had nothing. You climbed six flights of stairs, not a phonograph record player or records in his home.
Oh, my gosh.
And he lived in this one room with his kid and his wife. And I went to a publisher friend of mine in France, in Paris, and I said, I want you to do me one favor. I said, I want you to find out all the songs that Django wrote and everything else, and then get all the publishers together. We're going to have a meeting here Saturday. Okay, and Django didn't get any of the money. And I made sure that he got the money for his monument and for his resting place and plenty of money for his family. Yeah, and then, of course, I lost one of my best friends.
And what a story. What a life he lived.
Oh, you know, he used to, we were riding in a taxi, and he was in the back seat of the car, and he tapped me on the shoulder. And he asked the cab driver if I could read, and I says, no. And he laughed like mad. He says, I can't read either.
Oh, wow.
So then he asked me another question. He says, do I play, am I playing right or am I playing bad? Can you imagine something like that?
Wow.
And I says, I idolize you. I says, I think you're just the finest guitarist in the whole world. And then he asked the third question. And the third question was, do you think I should change my way of playing? I'm going to get an electric guitar. And you know, they took my electric guitar, and when he passed away, he was playing my guitar.
Boy. Wow.
I tell you.
And we were so close to each other, and the one thing I wanted to do is to bring him back to the United States and with the right background, come over here and let everybody hear how great he was. He was just not only a lovable guy, but he had a great family, and they were poor, but he was happy playing his music.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was confused when he came over to America and wasn't received the way he thought that he would be received.
Mm-hmm. And now he's an icon.
Yeah.
You see kids wearing T-shirts with D-J-A-N-G-O.
Yep.
And you say, wow, you wonder how that happened, that they become such big fans of his. We've got to take another quick break, and we're going to come back. And
if you can hang with us, we're literally just going to break for 90 seconds, and we'll come right back.
Wrap up with Les Paul, who's our dear friend, and we're so fortunate to talk with him during this International Guitar Month.
Les, you haven't had a chance to say hi to Paula. Paula, say hi to Les.
Hey, Les, how are you?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Les.
Hi, Les. I already caught you coming back from a break.
Is that Paula?
That's Paula. You're Paula, yes.
Oh, hi, Paula.
Well, hey, Les. Well, I know my brother Joe wants to say hi to you as well. I was speaking to him earlier today, and he told me to tell you to say hey.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Now, Paula, we were just talking, reminiscing about 1996 when Les was at the House of Blues here, and Paula was at that time our producer, and Paula was solely responsible, all 5 foot of Paula. She kidnapped Les Paul, she and her brother, and brought him over here, despite the fact that the people from Gibson Guitar, not very happy because he left the party. But Paula said, well, I'm sorry, he wants to come play on the radio. And you did.
I don't know that Gibson has forgiven us for that yet, Les.
And do you know that that's the night that I sat in the dressing room and decided to go out and announce that this is my last performance?
Really?
Yes, I was going to retire for good that night.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, why is because with the arthritis and everything, I just I don't think I can play anymore like I used to play. And that rotten kid used to play pretty good. and even today, when I get up on the stage, I think of all the things that I would like to play that are difficult to play now. And that goes all the way back to the House of Blues. And I was going to go out there and announce that this was my final performance. And it was the people that were, they stood up and they were good to me. They applauded and they were just, they just made me change my mind.
Wow. Well, we're so fortunate. And I know Paula will back us up on this after seeing you perform live last year in May at the hotel up in Waukesha. We were absolutely blown away by your performance. You just know the...
You
have the audience in... You have, but
so
you have,
good to me.
No, you have the audience in the palm of your hand when you're up there on stage.
And when you did, up in Waukesha, when you did Over the Rainbow, there wasn't a dry eye in the place, Les.
Yeah, I played it last night. I saw a man down there crying. Mm-hmm. And I see him all the time. Whenever I play a pretty song and they start to cry, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a gal one night, and I thought there was something wrong with her, you see. And she showed no expression at all. And I kind of played for her. And the more I played for her, the more she looked like she didn't feel well. And finally, after the show, I went over to her and I says, "Are you okay, hon?" And she says, "No, I'm just crying, that's all." And she just got her. And I didn't do anything. All I did was say what I was thinking, the way the song was written, how it should be played, thinking of Judy, thinking of all the good things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what goes in, what's in your head can come out of your hands.
Yeah.
And you can make music, and it somehow it gets into your head, and it's something that's unexplainable, but you can say more. Where we are, where we're playing in New York, there are Chinese, there are every nationality that you can think of, some of Argentina, they're from everywhere in the world, and they're all down there, and many of them that are never been to New York, never spoke English. You have such a vast difference of people in the audience. And it's your turn to get up on the stage and make them all understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what you can do with your hands.
Hmm.
And you have to have, your faith has to be there and soul. Yeah, the whole thing.
So,
I hate to get mushy, but...
No, go ahead, get
absolutely
mushy. We're right there with you,
yeah,
Les.
Yeah.
But that's what's necessary to do when you have many different people that they all dig you.
Mm-hmm. And the music, it doesn't matter what language you're speaking, the music unifies you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, unless you play an accordion.
Oh! So, Les,
am I picking on you?
Well, what's the difference between an accordion and an onion?
I don't know. What is the difference?
No one cares if you chop up an accordion. No one cries if you chop up an accordion. That's it. Yeah, see, we got on the subject the other night about the Rodney Dangerfield of musical instruments, and I said I thought that the accordion was one of those instruments, got no respect, right up there with the banjo, and so people started calling in with jokes Oh, my gosh. You know, there are jokes for bagpipers because a lot of folks feel that the bagpipes get no respect. And then the drummers started calling and said, well, drummers get no respect. Nobody understands us.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, it was funny. And then the bass player says, well, the guitar player thinks he rules, and we bass players, we're the ones that keep the bass line going.
Then we had one guy call in, and he said, what do you call a guy that hangs out with musicians?
What do you call him?
A drummer.
Oh, yeah. I did hear that one. That's
oh,
funny.
Golly. No.
Hey, Steve, I swear, it's funny.
It is always fun to talk with you, Les.
Yes.
And I hope that we can get you back to Chicago sometime.
We always say that. We got you close when we got you up in Waukesha. Almost kidnapped you. Almost brought you south of the border. But then we thought we'd have to pay the price.
I'm going to be there because I have to be there for the Rock Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
They're I don't know, they're honoring me for something.
Oh, something around there. Maybe you can do something before they get around to honoring you, you think?
Maybe they're going to stuff me and put me in there.
Oh, dear.
Can I just quickly, before we say goodnight, and you're going to understand why I'm thinking of this. We talked to Dusty Rogers last night, Roy Rogers' son.
Oh, my goodness.
And Roy's son, Dusty, told us about how, you know, when Roy came home after Trigger died and he said to Dale, I'm going to have Trigger stuffed. And she said, oh, Roy, that's just gruesome. That's awful. And apparently she said something along the lines, do you expect me to do that to you? But we started thinking about the fact that Dale actually worked in Chicago as a singer before she married Roy. And we were wondering if you'd ever crossed paths with her.
She sang in my trio.
Oh, come on.
Really?
She did. She should. And so did...
Well, Doris Day worked with you.
With Captain Kangaroo. What's her name? Well, you know.
Well, I know Doris Day worked with you for a while, right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Captain Kangaroo.
No, that was Lumpy. it was the gal. The gal. Cooker Fran and Allison.
Oh, Fran Allison. Sure.
Allison used to do a show with me every morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, now, I loved Chicago, and I knew everybody in Chicago.
Well, yeah. Your reputation's still alive here, Les.
Yeah, the good and the bad, Les.
Maybe that's why you don't come back to town. Is that it? You're wanted in Chicago?
I love you guys so much, and thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you can feel a great big hug from all of us.
You know, we love you too, Les.
Thank you.
And you take care of yourself, and we want to hear about the movie, we want to hear about the studio that's opening, all this stuff that you teased us with tonight, okay?
Yeah, the movie doesn't move. You're going to have to move.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll stay in touch with you, buddy. We love you dearly. Take care.
Thank you.
God bless
Thanks
you.
A lot, Les.
Bye-bye,
God bless.
Bye-bye.
If you ever have the good fortune of seeing him live in concert. He said a few minutes ago that what comes into your head comes, in his case, it comes out of his fingers. I feel it might come as a surprise that at 90, almost 93 years old, there are times that what comes into his head comes out of his mouth. So when he's live in concert and he's in a nightclub setting, you might be a little surprised by his humor.
Yeah.
But when he plays music like that, I tell you.
There really isn't a dry eye in the place. That was one of those moments. And it was just it'll be a year ago, May 10th. When we were up in Waukesha, and we were privileged to be part of the show, introducing Les for his homecoming concert. And when he did Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I mean, the room was, and there were hundreds of people, the room was absolutely quiet, you could hear a pin drop, and you knew you were seeing something special.
And I know that, like me, you will never forget the night when he started reminiscing about the first time he met Judy Garland.
And, yeah.
And he remembers the outfit that she was wearing when she was walking across the tarmac at the airport. And, you know, working with her and then later on doing the song with her in mind. And it's just, he's really something. I think without question, one of the greatest musicians of all time. I mean, and hands down, there was a time when he was the greatest guitarist in America. I mean, that was a given. And it's just so cool. Ted sent us an email, and Ted does some substitute teaching, and Ted was telling us that just yesterday when he was subbing, you overheard a 12-year-old?
Yeah, seventh graders. Two seventh grade boys were talking during a free period right after lunch, and one was just absolutely so excited that he was getting a Les Paul guitar this coming weekend.
Wow.
I mean, just he was going nuts, and he was telling his friend all about it and how he'd been wanting one forever, and just I mean, these are 12-year-olds, you know? I mean, just so excited.
And I wonder, and I'd love to ask, do you know he's really a man? And he's, because that's
I wanted to say something. Yeah. I sort of kind of keep my professional life away from the kiddies. You know, I don't necessarily want them staying awake till 11 o'clock to try to hear Mr. N on the radio.
Right.
But, you know, I was like, do you know I'm going to be talking to him in about 7 hours?
And that he really is a person, not just a guitar. And that's what we joke about, because there was that fantastic beer commercial a few years ago. Ted, do you remember that commercial?
It was Coors, right?
It was Coors. In fact, go to YouTube and do a search for Les Paul Coors, and you will see it. And it is wonderful.
And he had a hand in writing that commercial, because he actually got a little tired of people forgetting that he was a living, breathing human being. And so you got this hot dog up there playing guitar, and Les is sitting there drinking beer with some older buddies.
Let's try something. Can you go to YouTube? Let me see if we can do this.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I need to readjust a couple things on the control board here.
I am also now able to bring up that sort of audio.
Are.
So
okay.
If you
okay.
Back up.
Have you found it?
I'm searching right now.
Okay. And by the way, if you do a search for Les Paul, you'll find, as we mentioned, some wonderful video.
Oh, you will find. In fact, do a search for Les Paul and Chet Atkins, and there are two videos of Les and Chet playing together. I think it was on the old Nashville Network. And
I did find the Les Paul spot, by the way.
Okay. Well, if you've got it, then let me set it up. What this is, Les and a friend are sitting in a tavern, and they're just having a beer. And this young guy goes up on stage, and he's
a good-looking whippersnapper.
And he's, you know, doing some hot dog blues things. And then Les comes up and asks him if he can play his guitar. And the guy says, "You play?" And Les says, "A little." Picks up the guitar and does some incredible riffs, and then the guy says, "Wow, what's your name?" And Les says, "What's on your guitar? You want to play the whole thing now if you got it?"
I would love to, but the magic of live radio, now my audio isn't working.
Okay.
So if you do a search for Les Paul and Coors, it's the first one that pops up.
Oh, I can try this too.
You got it?
Yeah, I'm going to turn it on, and we'll see what happens here when I click on it. And here we go. The cool Les Paul Coors commercial is what comes up. She said, and isn't this amazing, Ted? I've been looking at it, and until we decided, this is crazy. This is absolutely hysterical, because I have literally been watching Steve, you're recapping it. I'm watching it and going,
Now you just hit replay on it, or what did you do?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. Can I see the guitar?
You play?
I've been known to.
That's cool.
What's your name? It's on your guitar.
That gives me goosebumps, because the guy looks at him like, holy smokes. And then Les tells the story. Ted, you'll love this. He tells the story of when they were making the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they had to do a lot of takes, and he just kept drinking beer. And he had the tendency at that time to always crush the beer can when he was done. And after about the fourth or fifth, they were like, Les, A, you got to stop drinking the beers, and B, stop crushing the cans. It's not working. And at one point, I guess he was getting free Coors beer every year.
Yeah, I think he was for
and
a
then,
while.
Then they decided something happened, and he said on the radio, he said, that's it. I'm not drinking any more Coors. Remember that, Coop?
I do. He said he was going to drink Heineken.
They took him off. They took him off, and he said, that's it. No more Coors. I'm not a Coors man anymore.
By the way, I just got a phone call from my dad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Loved it. He said, you guys did a great job. Loved the interview. And he said, Bless is just amazing.
He is.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's really enjoyed it.
Coop's dad in St. Louis, who listens to us on the computer.
And again, I know I say this a lot, but I don't apologize for being a Les Paul geek. If there is anybody to look up to, it's Les, whether or not you play guitar. And for those of you who say, well, I'm over 60 and I can hardly hobble around, he will be 93 in June. Still playing every week at the Club Uranium. And you can hear, this is a guy who, he's alive and well and enjoying life.
You notice he's calling himself 93 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's getting, he's kind of saying it to get used to the idea that he's 93 years old.
You know, we forgot to ask him, and I kept thinking of it, but every time we talk with Les, and you would think in the years we've been talking to him, we must have asked him every question. But I always think of things that didn't get around to asking. But one of the small things was how Russ is doing. His son Russ, who's a who's a terrific guy. Russ does the sound and handles a lot of the managerial things, although Les has a specific manager. But Russ is a terrific guy, too.
And you just reminded me of something. Russ made me think of Ross. I was recently reading an interview with Ross Bagdasarian Jr., and he and his wife they brought the Chipmunks back to life. Their dad was the one that started the Chipmunks back in the 50s. And they're talking about the fact that the Chipmunks movie may not have done really well at the box office, or so you think, but it's already, it's like over $100 million.
Right.
It's just huge.
With the DVD sales for kids.
Absolutely. Wildly popular. And in this interview, he just made an offhanded comment about Les Paul's impact on the Chipmunks being who they are. And I thought, wow.
And again, for people who don't know, Ross Bagdasarian was the real name for the man who became known as David Seville, David Seville and the Chipmunks. And the Chipmunks' voices, they were speeded up tape. This was the process. This is before digital. This is the process Les Paul invented.
Yeah. And, I was kind of tickled because I realized then, back when you were listening to his music in the 50s, I was loving the Chipmunks and didn't know that I was in a roundabout way being impacted by him.